When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Welcome to a brand new edition of Freedom Books, Flowers and the Moon, the podcast brought to you each week by the Times Literary Supplement. My name is Stig Abel and I am the editor of the TLS. And I'm back with Thea Leonarduzzi. Thea, how are you?
I'm okay.
How is Alf?
Alf is less okay.
Oh, no.
I mean, he's all right. He's post-op.
What was wrong with him?
Well, he's male and he's not allowed to express his maleness in the fullness of...
Nature intended.
Exactly. So he's feeling a little sorry for himself. And he's also determined to get to the site of his phantom. So he is now wearing a cone, a onesie, and a neck brace. He's very
like some sort of dystopian nightmare, isn't it?
It's horrible, and I think he sees me as his oppressor.
Wow.
Which at the moment, I suppose I am.
Yeah, you're sort of a gynocracy for him. In a sort of modern version, it's a male version of The Handmaid's Tale for him, is it basically? Gilead for dogs, but inverted.
His hood.
Yeah.
Oh.
There's a story there, probably. Food and drink issue for Christmas coming along okay?
Yeah, are you worried?
No, I've read some of this stuff. Are we getting a tiki thing about...
I hope we are. It's very much underway. So in terms of teasers, I will say to you Marie Kondo. I will say to you Wine and Volcanoes, Cultural History of Tiki.
The future of food?
It's the past... and future. So, I mean, I figure we're at the end of a decade, we're looking into another decade of new food policy, food methods, security, international relations. So we're going to have a huge, sprawling account of the future and recent past of food.
Will that include Hawaiian pizzas? The tiki thing will, won't
tiki
it?
Tiki doesn't, actually.
Oh. We can sort that out later. I hope all of you had a look at the new print version of the TLS and like the design. The new website will be launched by the time you hear this, and I hope you like that too. And there's also a TLS shop where you can buy our books by Lee Child and Virginia Woolf and some merch as well. If you want a cheap subscription, especially as a gift this Christmas or Thanksgiving, stop what you're doing and do this. If you live in the US or Canada, go to podcast.the-tls.com. And if you live anywhere else, including the UK, then go to the-tls.co.uk/pod19. £5 or $5 for 5 issues. Right, coming up this week, Books of the Year. David Horsepool has curated, as I believe the modern word is, a whole bunch of submissions, which he does every year and moans a lot about it. And he'll be on with some TLS editors to discuss the selections and help us make some of our own. Every serious newspaper does a Books of the Year feature, a festival of showing off, log rolling and general literary frolicking. But I think the TLS version is unique in the range of books and contributors that get included. This year, no book was chosen more than twice, and the only double nominees were Think, Write, Speak, a collection of Nabokov marginalia, and two French novels, Serotonin by Welbeck, a sort of state of the nation political novel, and Animalia by Jean-Baptiste Delarmo, a saga of pig farmers. What are we to conclude from that? And what would our books of the year be? And by our, I mean TLS editors, like David Horsepool, the man who puts the list together, moaning lustily as he does, the Doctor, Michael Caines, Northern pop star and web guru, Lucy Dallas. And they're all here to tell us. Hello.
Hello.
Moaning lustily.
I don't recognise that description.
Do you complain about this, David? Do you enjoy doing it?
I think you're drawing the curtain aside on the magic that creates this every year a little bit. But yes.
Yeah, I think people will be able to draw their own conclusions from that. Repeat nominations go to a Russian and two Frenchmen.
Yes.
Is this a sort of... Do you think this is a sign of globalism, the response to Brexit that people were waiting for?
No, I wouldn't say that. I think it's the broad sympathies of our cultivated contributors, as always. And I also noticed there are some very British choices amongst them.
Go on.
Such as, well, Keith Miller chose Nicola Barker's I Am Sovereign. And yeah. he describes it as a novel in which the action takes place during a 20-minute house viewing in Llandudno, which you couldn't get
that's not that
more of our island
that's
than
not
that.
Cosmopolitan, is it?
No, and then you've got Claire Carlisle choosing various George Eliot-themed books to go with the bicentenary of her birth, and Craig Raine choosing the Poet Laureate's latest, Simon Armitage's Sandetti Light Vessel Automatic, which all our American listeners will know is part of the shipping forecast.
I've interviewed him about that, and I didn't know that it was...
I didn't know it was part of the shipping forecast.
I must have known when I spoke
to him.
Did you say so? Where'd you get the weird name from, Simon?
Yeah, exactly.
Did you?
I didn't, but I do ask stupid questions like that. And also, there is one Brexit book on the list.
There is a Brexit book on the list. Who has chosen that?
Michael Hoffman.
It
feels
course.
Like the barometer needle has quit Belle Lettre and is stuck on Doc, Give It To Me Straight. Increasingly, one reaches for non-fiction accounts of the ambient calamities bearing down on the species. No doubt the English Spring is one of the least of these, but for purity of idiocy, persistent deludedness and revelation of depths of nastiness towards one's own and others, it's hard to beat Fintan O'Toole's heroic failure, Brexit and the Politics of Pain.
I had to read that a couple of times, but I think he doesn't like it, does he?
Brexit.
I think he likes the book.
But does he really like the
book?
Yeah, absolutely. Because Fintan O'Toole is a...
It's much lauded, that book.
Very critical of the whole
He also says...
Project.
Because he's telling the horrible story brilliantly. Is that what he means?
Yeah, it's indeed. A sterling misapplication of the author's gifts of intelligence and understanding. I wish it 60 million readers.
But that's what I thought he meant, because it's a misapplication. I'm not very good at reading, actually.
I think he wishes that he had not had to... Fintan O'Toole had not had to write such a book.
His application could have been on a better subject.
Exactly.
But this was the necessary subject.
I corresponded with Michael Hoffman the morning after the referendum result, and you can imagine our exchange.
I remember seeing you the morning after the referendum.
Yeah, I think
You were not very happy. You were not in a good note.
I was not in a good place.
Who knew that 3 years later we'd still be talking about it? There aren't that many political books. Do you notice that?
No, there aren't, are there?
Last year there was Democracy, Democracy, a History or something like that? There have been some political books often in this list.
This year they haven't gone very political. Even Paul Collier, who usually can be relied upon to... pick of quite a political book. He's gone for a social science book, Blueprint by Nicholas Christakis.
And Serotonin.
And indeed Michel Houellebecq. Yeah, absolutely.
And there are some rule breakers here.
Yeah, we like it. I do try.
Do you allow. How stern a master of this are you, David?
I try and be pretty stern on please don't recommend your wife, child, or. Sisters.
The log roll.
Will that apply to you as well, David?
It absolutely might. we shall have to see.
I believe someone closely did publish a book this year.
Yes,
Very good book.
Very good book. My wife, Julia Bueno, wrote a book. And it's a brilliant book. Yeah. It's called The Brink of Being, and I can highly recommend it
to
everyone.
Well done.
How
much attempts at log rolling are there?
Very little, actually.
Really?
I don't think I had to tell anyone not to do it this year. I have in the past, but people seem... Once you actually ask them not to do it, then they don't do it, because lots of people have read lots of books that we ask.
Yeah.
And therefore, they're perfectly capable of not doing it. It's just some people think that's what they're supposed to do, is to pick their friends' books. But once you tell them not to, they don't mind. But there are some rule breakers here. There are some people who don't pick books that were actually published this year, and I don't mind if they were published last year, because they're usually out in paperback, or they were published on different sides of the Atlantic. There are, though, cases of people who choose books published in 1901.
Stephen Brown, written on the cusp of the 20th century, Thomas Mann was only 25. Budd and Brooks looks back at a 19th century family saga from a distinctly modern perspective. Should you have any lingering nostalgia for that period, this book is guaranteed to rid you of it. Michael, that period's a bit late for you, isn't it?
Oh, it's terribly late.
The 19th
talking
century.
About the future. I have no idea what he means.
Michael, you don't like prizes, as people listening to this podcast will know.
Oh, yeah, terrible.
You're a vast cynic on prizes.
Who would involve themselves in literary prizes,
Dick Abel? I know, it's a terrible thing. Do you feel the same about books of the year?
It does disturb me for some unknown reason. However, I like that there are rule breakers. Yeah. Because, well, it's more honoured in the breach, isn't it? I like that people's enthusiasm bubbles over. That said, like, I can't quite place what it is that disturbs me about the whole books of the year phenomenon. But it is like, if you read a few in other papers, which are, of course, infinitely inferior. Sorry, other papers. But you're being hit over the head repeatedly by the same recommendations. And often you have seen them already in prize lists or their bestsellers or the things you would have come across anyway. I think the TLS list is quite distinctive. I was looking back at some previous versions.
I saw you doing this.
I think something that has changed is that maybe it depends who's asking, what exactly the question is, all that kind of thing. But it used to be a lot more about languages other than English.
Yeah.
This is completely, almost completely disappeared. It does happen, but it's nothing like what it was.
It used to be called the International Books of the Year, didn't it?
International Books of the Year.
And I think people thought they had to choose a book in a foreign language, which was a sort of Olympian constraint, as our managing editor might say, which would just, I think, be a bit excessive, really, and not very helpful to quite a lot of readers.
There's the danger of showing off as well, isn't there? Sort of naming the most recondite subject that you could ever do. It didn't feel like this occasion. This was a strange combination of books, like you say, Michael. It's not bestsellers, really. I wonder how many of these are bestsellers. There's one mention of the book winner. Stoppard recommends Bernardine Evaristo's Girl, Woman, Other. That's the only one, I think,
it's
for that.
About the only recommendation that she could get, which might actually add to her sales, Stoppard on the back.
And Robert Irwin
recommended the new book.
A little-known author, Lee Child. Has anyone read the new book by Lee Child?
Well, he's referring to a different new book.
Yeah, I can't believe you had an opportunity to talk about the new book by Lee Child, not put our one.
Actually, you've got a point.
Yeah, but you picked entirely the wrong. He said, like its numerous
novel as well.
Predecessors, the thriller Blue Moon by Lee Child is in a class of its own for the thoroughness of its research, its inventive and somewhat violent plotting, and above all, for its extraordinary narrative suspense. Robert Irwin is a big fan of the genre novel. He of course, did that review recommending A Man on a Donkey, which he said was the greatest historical novel ever written.
Absolutely.
And I went to read it on the back of that.
And you agreed?
No, I didn't. It was good. It was fine. It was a very long novel about the Pilgrimage of Grace.
Yes, it's a bit drawn out.
Yeah,
isn't it?
It's fine. I've read a lot of historical novels, and I like it. So, I thought it was good. I didn't think it was the best ever. But he obviously likes his genre stuff.
Robert Irwin's Books of the Year selection also brings us something else that is so joyous about this feature, David, which is the eclecticism, the range. Quite often, a contributor will choose two or three, sometimes four books, I think. He chooses two, and they're very, very different. There's Lee Child, and then what's the other one? It's a 3,000-year history of
People's Tribes and Empires. I've read both of them, in a weird
showing off.
Thank you.
Keith Miller, I think, should also win some kind of prize for eclecticism.
Go on, what's he doing?
Because he has Nicola Barker's new novel, which you mentioned before, I Am Sovereign. Then he has For the Good Times by David Keenan, which would be Goodfellas transposed from Brooklyn to the Ardoyne and with Kenneth Anger in the director's chair instead of Martin Scorsese, as well as Fabulosa, the story of Polari, Britain's secret gay language by Paul Baker, and Chamber Music about the Wu-Tang Clan in 36 pieces. And he describes imagining RZA composing rhymes on long walks around Staten Island like Wordsworth in a puffer jacket.
That seems like a deliberate quest for eclecticism, don't you feel?
Well, I was more exercised by whether puffer jacket needed to be upper or lower case. It's a proprietary name to people.
Other jackets are available.
Exactly.
We're allowed to that. My favourite rule breaker was Clive Stafford Smith. Who I think is possibly my favourite rule breaker in life generally.
He does, in fact, uphold the law.
Well, he does.
In every fibre of his being.
He does, but he upholds the law in a slightly anarchic against the establishment way, I feel. You know, he stands up for people who are being ignored by the law. And we've got a piece from him next week, actually, about the last Afghan in Guantanamo, which is just the most shocking story. This is a guy in Guantanamo. He's been in there for several years. He has committed no crime. They are not even prosecuting a case against him. They have conceded that there is no case to answer against him. And Donald Trump, because he tweeted in 2017, no more releases from Guantanamo Bay, he's just in Guantanamo Bay.
Because it's beyond the law.
And it's like something from the 18th century France. It's like a letter of the cachet. I know he writes quite often for us, and he says, tells these stories, and you kind of think, oh, yeah, it's another story from...
They never cease to shock.
It still baffles me that how, in a world of habeas corpus and, the rule of law. How is that possible? Anyway, so he does that, which I think is very laudable and great, but he is actually rather brilliantly, and is this the last Afghan in Guantanamo guy he's actually handed over his nomination to? He's sending them to one of his clients in Guantanamo. He's got more than one, Ahmed Rabbani, who was recommended rather brilliantly Solitary by Albert Woodfox about the 44 years he spent in isolation as a member of the Angola 3 in Louisiana. I was amazed that the US mistreats its own people the way they do us. And he says, Solitary is an extraordinary book, and for someone like me who has been in isolation for years, it underlined my predicament. That's a really good use of the books of the year.
Bit of rule breaking, I thought too. Yeah, absolutely.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Okay, who would go and read a book based on one of these recommendations? Has anyone felt tempted to read a book based on any of them? Does anyone feel
inspired? Do you mean who would go and read, like, what sort of person?
No, you.
Possibly. Oh, right, no, you mean us.
Yeah, you, Lucy Dallas, have read...
House? I thought you meant her.
No, it wasn't a rhetorical question.
Oh, right.
Whose house would you break into and scour their shelves until you found the books that they mentioned in
yeah,
this?
Yeah, exactly. Who do you think's a good...
I'll tell you one I like. Go on. Is David Bromwich. I don't know if that's how you say it.
Yeah.
It's got Bromwich. Brecht's Collected Poems.
Yeah.
Just because there were some really good lines from it. Some lines. The man who laughs has simply not yet heard the terrifying news. Yeah, and there's another one. Would it not be simpler if the government dismissed the people and elected another one? Yeah. That's kind of apropos, isn't it?
Yeah, it's cheery. I'm quite tempted to read Buddenbrooks.
Yeah, well, I mean...
Oh, okay.
Have you read Michael...
Because of your lingering nostalgia for the...
19th century?
Yeah.
Do you know what...
Or what I call the future.
Yeah, what you call the future. Do you know what? I actually read, some years ago, but with great pleasure, The Magic Mountain. I think Thomas Mann's other well-known book. And I found it such a joy, and it's this sort of immersive... A guy goes to meet his cousin at a sanatorium in Davos, amusingly enough, and he hangs out there. He's not allowed access. They think he's got TB. Is it TB? Mm-hmm. And he's there for 7 years, and he meets a lot of people who are sort of symbolic of Europe in the pre-war, and then the war happens and everything ends. But the actual story of being confined in these lovely chairs and looking out over the thing, I found sort of remarkably consoling. Has anyone here read Buddenbrooks? Can anyone?
I have not.
No.
Oh, come on.
A family saga is all I can tell.
Make
you
us do this on a podcast.
Well, I know. I expect four TLS editors.
I think that's another desponding thing about these lists, isn't it? Surely, even if you're asking, would we follow in these recommendations, they're more inclined to make me say no. Some of the poetry ones are very interesting. I'd like to pick up some of those. The Brecht, certainly, Ken Smith. But the other thing is you realise you're never going to read all of this. This is the collective wisdom of 60-odd brilliant minds.
Yeah, and actually, that's one of the chastening things, isn't it? Books table. We should tweet a photograph of our books table.
Oh,
because that's... A table of books, all produced, or a large amount of them will be produced by very clever people for very laudable reasons, for very little money, I would think, generally speaking. And even we try and cover an awful lot of books on an awful lot of subjects, and a lot of them will just sit there and then get moved on.
Absolutely.
Thomas Mann also gave me one of my favourite ever headlines at the TLS because he was horrible to his son, Klaus Mann, which gave the headline Man's Inhumanity to Man.
Very good.
Very good.
Michael, people can't see your shrugging gesture. any others that you might be tempted by?
I think I'm going to be tempted by, I suspect, the same book as I was tempted by last year, which
I was think, it by Julia Bueno?
No, I've read that one.
Now in paper. Yeah.
Very good
I
book.
Think
very,
you may have said to book. Me last year, are you going to read it? You're definitely going to read it. And I have read lots of books this year. I'm very proud to say.
Not this one. What was it?
It's the A Certain Idea of France by Julian Jackson, the biography of Charles de Gaulle.
Oh.
Which Roy Foster recommends, as well as a book I have read, biography of Eric Hobsbawm by Richard Evans, which is tremendous. But I keep meaning to read A Certain Idea of France.
And are you going
to?
It's very long, isn't it?
It is. Is rather long, but I really will know a lot more about France if I read it, and
only
obviously about de Gaulle.
A certain
you know,
good point.
De Gaulle's idea of France is a pretty good.
I think you should probably start with A Certain Idea of France and then build from there. I think that's acceptable.
You could read that and Serotonin, and then you'd think, oh, hang on a minute.
Can I ask if anyone's read Serotonin? No, on, guys. Where's our preparation for it?
Lucy has read another French novel that's recommended twice.
That's I have. Too. Thank
what?
You. Thank you
what?
Very much for that.
Oh, have you?
Lovely.
What?
Yes. Yeah. Don't
what?
Sound so
what?
Surprised.
You've read something.
Yes, and as
relevant.
As you will remember, Stig, I reviewed it for the Times Literary Supplement.
Go on.
Animalia by
Tell
Jean-Baptiste
us about, I do remember this now, of course. Tell
he
us.
Said quickly.
We spoke about it on the podcast, in fact.
Yes, I think. Yes, in fact, I think we
so
did.
So tell us. Give
regular
us the,
listeners
give us,
will remember.
Give us the. Give us the Cliff's Notes.
Well, it is about. It's about sort of 100 years of the same family. Who farm pigs.
You liked it. I think I was on the podcast as well when we talked about it.
I think like is a difficult
yeah,
word.
Like yeah. is it was very, it's very, very difficult and depressing. There's no joy or
so
light, but that's on purpose. Especially, it turns out, if you're a pig farmer in this particular family. But I was really, really delighted to discover, in fact, I've underlined it a number of times.
I know exactly what you're going to say.
Go on.
Because one of the people who recommends it says he's a vegetarian and he lives with two rescue pigs.
I underlined that too.
Which is just brilliant. Because actually, a lot of the book is about, like, they mistreat the pigs awfully and they don't... They can't think of them as being able to feel, or they can't allow that possibility because they're so awful to the pigs and their livelihood depends on it. It doesn't depend on them being that awful, but they can't open the door to the possibility that the pigs might have any kind of feelings, even of pain, let alone emotion, because that would their lives wouldn't be able to go on. Yeah,
does it put
exactly.
you off eating bacon?
Yes. Yes, it does.
Has it stopped you eating bacon?
Not completely. No, not completely, but I'm making great and concerted efforts.
And it's part of that part...
Not
that,
just because of that
No,
book,
but it's part of the sort of spirit of the age.
Very much so, yeah. Yeah, very much so.
Oh, that's good that it's kind of... It's kind
and
of...
actually, the nice bit at the end is when one of the big pig, who's called the Beast, he escapes and he gets out into the countryside and he's never been in the countryside before. And that's actually rather lovely because he's kind of like... He's sniffing about and going, whoa, what's this? And he goes under a tree and there's nobody like... Hitting him really hard.
In the pantheon of novels featuring pigs as characters, where would you put it?
Is it's the most depressing of the
is
novels.
Is it better than Animal Farm? Is it better than Sheep?
Landings.
Yeah, Sheep Pig? Or, there's a whole feature to be written about this, isn't it? The pigs in literature.
Or Charlotte's Web.
Babe, Charlotte's Web.
Babe is the sheep pig.
Empress of Blandings is the canonical pig, surely.
But you don't get her point of view.
Well, you get a sense of how much she likes to eat and sort of relax.
Wallow.
Yeah.
You see, she has a much nicer
She's got
time
a great age. She has 57,000 calories a day.
Than the pigs in Animalia. Yeah.
I believe.
Yeah. I've heard it
yeah,
said.
Certainly not read those books too much. I feel we're going down a slight sidetrack here. One last thing, David, before we give our own. There's quite a lot of history books, I thought. Is that because they're playing... to the choir of you and trying to reward your subject.
Many of them have no idea who I am.
Why is he emailing me again?
Yeah, exactly.
Who is this man?
Who is this horse pool? Has it been a bump? Does it feel like it's been a good year for history? Big bulk, because there's Dermot McCulloch's book on Thomas Cromwell.
Well, that was actually also, I think, last year.
You let that in?
I did let it in because, again, I think it may have been published... in America. Peter Green's in America, so
we can forget a bit later. Yeah, has it been a good year?
I think it's been a pretty good year for
lots
history.
Of books about Hitler.
There are always lots of books about Hitler, but other than that, there have been some very good history books. For example, about Charlemagne and about all sorts of different aspects of history.
The big blockbuster history book's still there, isn't it? Churchill and...
Yeah, absolutely. There was a very big Churchill biography at the beginning of the year, Andrew Roberts. They continue to
to weigh us all down, weigh you down.
To wallop onto my desk, yes.
Right, we're going to get to our own choices, but before we do, a short message from our friends at Harvard University Press. It's published a compelling new biography that recasts the most important European statesman of the first half of the 19th century, famous for his alleged arch-conservatism and pursuit of international peace. It's Clemens von Metternich, who is one of those figures whom I've heard a bit about but couldn't write with any great confidence or length about either. He's got a reputation as the epitome of reactionary conservatism. Historians treat him as the arch enemy of progress, a ruthless aristocrat who used his power as the dominant European statesman of the first half of the 19th century to stifle liberalism, suppress national independence, and oppose the dreams of social change that inspired the revolutionaries of 1848. But in this book, Wolfram Seemann paints a fundamentally new image of the man who shaped Europe for over four decades. He reveals him as more modern and his career as much more forward-looking than we've ever recognised. Hailed on its German publication as a masterpiece of historical writing, Metternich is an essential guide to 19th century Europe and therefore the modern world. And Harvard University Press are offering 30% off all books throughout December, so head to www.hup.harvard.edu. That's hup.harvard.edu to order Metternich at a discounted price. David, are you an expert on Metternich?
I am not, but I have just been reading a very long review of that very book, I'm pleased to say, by a former editor of the TLS.
Really?
Yeah.
Which one?
By Ferdinand Mount.
Oh, lovely. We'll be reviewing it.
We will be reviewing it shortly.
At length
and with great interest. And I can give you an interesting Metternich fact if you'd like. So I think Thea would like this too. The Sachertort was created for Metternich.
Oh.
Yeah, by a teenage chef called Sachertort.
What is a Sachertort?
What was
a Sachertort is a lovely chocolate cake, Austrian chocolate cake.
Quite boozy.
Oh.
A bit of apricot jam and stuff in it. Oh, it's delicious.
Historical cakes would be an article I'd read, Thea. Mm. Apple Charlotte, that's about Princess Charlotte, isn't it?
Oh, there you are.
Isn't it? I think so.
Crepes,
yeah.
It's not really a cake, but
confectionery of
I'm sure there's something.
Yeah, exactly.
Peach Melba.
It's not a cake, but it's named
after
the
person.
You're just saying peas now.
Yeah, exactly. That's pretty much half this podcast
here.
I don't know if you remember. Right. Cheese on toast.
I thought you weren't listening.
No, well I was trying to move things on subtly.
And the mic is on.
Yeah, exactly. I do like cheese on toast. Right. Our own choices for books of the year. David, to set the rules, they have to be books. They don't have to be of the year.
Oh.
Is that fair? Well, that's pretty much the rules you've adopted in this whole feature. I don't think we could start
I've let
more
nothing
strict.
Through that isn't a book, which isn't true of every year, because someone did a podcast once.
Did they?
Yes.
Who did that?
I can't remember, but somebody did choose a spin-off podcast from This American Life.
It's just a...
Yeah, free for all.
Just,
oh, Serial.
Serial, yeah.
No, it wasn't. It was a different one.
S-Town.
Yeah.
Which is all
S-Town.
Right. S-Town, yeah. Who wants to go first?
I've spoken enough.
Michael Caines.
Oh, hello.
A book of this year, or indeed any year, potentially 300 years ago.
Ah, now. Tom Jones. Yeah. No, I think I've got two published this year. Can I go for two?
Yeah, go
one
for two.
One is actually somewhere.
Four.
One is actually in this list. I think This Is Pleasure by Mary Gatskill is fantastic. I think it's to be reviewed shortly in the TLS. I can't say by whom. But it's a really fantastic, very short sort of Me Too spin. It's really intriguing and brilliant. And I can't say too much about it without ruining it, but it's a man and a woman writing about a case involving the man. And it quickly turns everything upside down. It's just ingenious. I love it. And it is a tiny book. It's possibly only 100 pages.
Oh, amazing.
So you'll just, you know, one train trip, you'll have it. And
is
great.
She a big thing, Mary Gatskill?
Yeah, yeah. She's actually been featured in Books of the Year in the TLS a couple of times, I think. She's chosen a couple of years ago by DJ Taylor. And I think she's a really good thing. I really like her short fiction. I'm not so sure about some of the bigger novels, but yeah, she's great. And the other thing I think is completely different is something I reviewed in the TLS in the summer, which is the end of The League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, a comic series by Mr. Alan Moore and Mr. Kevin O'Neill, which has been running for some years now. And
love that piece.
This thing that they finished, this great sort of comic sequence, manages to draw on everything out of copyright in terms of adventure fiction. And quite a few things that are in. It's kind of modernised as it's gone along. It started off with 19th century figures like Alan Quatermain and Mina Harker, and then it's moved on through the 20th century and it's sort of broadened out and become a ridiculously large conspiracy and all kinds of silly things happen. And in the end, this is the swan song, and it pays tribute to all kinds of different comic styles. One, I got the individual issues, but the bound finished version is now out with some extra material in it, and both that finished version and one of the comics comes with a pair of 3D specs for the 3D panels. It's really something quite special.
Is it very literary? It's very literary, do you think?
There's all kinds of little tributes to American and British styles of comics, and also some scores settled, which I rather like too, because I think Moore is a mistreated man as well.
Oh, do you? He's a massive man in the world, though, isn't he? He's sort of much lauded as well.
Yeah, I mean, he's a cult figure, but he's had various difficulties with, you know, Americans. You could say that's gone on every time somebody tries to make a film. Yeah. Of one of his works, so there's some good little scores settled here.
Do you know what I wish I'd learnt when I was growing up was how to read comics properly, because I find that my eye isn't trained well, and so when I read books, I read quickly, really with the sort of narrative propulsion. I think with comics, there's a certain amount of pause you have to give on each frame, because you get the dialogue, but then also there's kind of a moment where you've got to pause to judge it as a little picture. Often with these things, I have intricate details and nods and jokes, and I don't think my brain reads them very well. So even stuff like I've bought for my kids, like Asterix, which I think is very good, or Watchmen, which I read this year, I can see the brilliance of it, but I just don't quite get into the rhythm of it. I find the rhythm really, really difficult, and I've said that to a couple of people, and I don't think it's entirely just me being thick. I think there is a sort of, if you don't get to it early, you don't train yourself how to read them. Do you buy that at all, do you think?
Yeah, I can see that there's a kind of way of getting into it. And also, I mean, I've been reading a little bit of manga recently, then you have to train yourself to go backwards, or they reset it, and that sort of slightly messes up the artwork. So there is a whole question of, you know, whether you're just completely used to that idea, and I don't think I pick up everything, especially in these ones that are really loaded with detail. But also then maybe it's in the gift of the artist as well to organise something so that your eye just flows over,
because in Watchmen there's bits of jokes where they run like narrative autobiography and stuff like that, which is in prose, and I found myself just reading that really easily, then going back to sort of slightly battling through. I enjoyed it, but it wasn't a straightforward read for me.
I think it's quite a good practice to have to read something a bit differently.
Yeah,
whether
that's probably
sometimes it's chunks of prose and then a picture, or, you know, or whatever it is, or whether it's like you say, like the manga backwards, or even if you're not used to reading poetry, read a bit of poetry and just. I think it's probably quite useful, or not useful.
And it usually clicks at some point, doesn't it? A lot of people said that. I remember when A Girl is a Half-Formed Thing came out, and people sort of maybe hadn't read something in stream of consciousness since they were at university or something, and it takes a while for your mind to get into that flow and to start to read it without being really aware of how you were reading it.
But it's like a dialect or another language, isn't it? And once you've got it, it's great, and then you've got another way of looking at things.
Yeah, the negative side of that is it can be very self-indulgent type of those things where it's a massive effort to get in because the author's taken no trouble to get you in.
Yes, but that depends on the quality of the work, I guess.
Go on, Lucy, give us your books of the year. How many? Don't look like confused. I'm about to ask you that question. It's the entire premise for this podcast. I sent you an email this morning where I said this
I'm
is what we were going
busy,
to do.
Stick.
I know you are. We are launching the website.
Didn't understand it.
We are
Are
we launching the website? New website?
It's almost launched. Yeah. Lots of people can see it already.
Hurrah. And it looks lovely, doesn't it?
So that's
your excuse. But even
it's
within
not
that,
my excuse. I've read loads of books.
Yeah. I feel that you could have prepared an answer to the question.
I have prepared an answer to the question.
Which is?
Do you mean books that I've read or books that I would recommend?
No, books you've read. Surely the nature of books of the year involves reading.
Although, don't get cross.
Do you reckon David might...
Calm down, dear.
Yeah.
Are you saying there's no overlap? Books you'd recommend and books you've read? Oh, I've read that. Don't go there.
Okay. All right. So I've read some
books. I
reckon
some people in TLS history have recommended books they've not read.
I'm sure that's got to be true.
Well, I won't do that.
Not this year.
I've been rereading a lot this year.
That's good. I love
so
a reread.
So I'll tell you what I recommend. Middlemarch.
Yes.
It's very good.
It is very
I've been
good.
Rereading that too.
Yeah. La Reine Margot by Dumas. I did read The Three Musketeers again, but it was La Reine Margot that really got me this time.
Is La Reine Margot as good as The Three Musketeers?
I think in some ways it is, yeah. It's really brilliant. Yeah. It's all about the Medicis and I don't know whether the history is right, David will know, and the Huguenot, the Bartholomew Day massacre and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I mean, I know that happened.
Terrible.
I don't know about the details.
We watched the film of it in my A-level history.
that's presumably too rude for A-level.
That's the reason I remember it. It's a French film, and there is some racy moments
in it. But the film is very, very serious and doesn't capture the joy of it. There's an enormous amount of joy and fun in it.
I might actually accept that recommendation, because I'm not sure I've read it.
It's very, very good.
Yeah, I've read a lot of Dumas, and I've loved the Musketeers series, and the sequel particularly.
Yeah, but La Reine Margot is great.
Did you read it in French?
Yes.
Ugh.
Sorry.
So chic, isn't it? It's just chic.
He said it in an accusing
way. Well, no, I just think it's chic, isn't it?
But I've also read some new books.
Go on.
But they're all science fiction.
That's okay, Lucy. We're a broad church here.
I know, and David reminded me that last year I too chose a graphic novel, or comic, as some people call them.
Okay, that's all right.
One of them is...
Michael's not chosen anything on the 18th century. You're allowed to make
your
own exactly.
Break out of your confines.
Yeah. Like a large pig roaming through the forest of literature.
Yeah. Freely.
Break out!
Yeah. As Michael the Beast.
Beast Games.
That's a bit unfair. Yeah. Anyway.
The Doctor's a better nickname.
Exhalation by Ted Chiang, which is a set of short stories. I suddenly remembered it just now. I think it's called Exhalation. It's very, very good. Okay. Really good. And I have been reading an 8-novel series of hard space opera, like really set in space.
Yeah.
Space opera?
Yeah.
Okay.
Called The Expanse.
Yeah.
By James S.A. Corey, which is actually two people. And I think there's a TV thing of it, but I haven't seen
it. Is this what is known as hard SF?
Yeah, it's exactly that, yeah.
Because it's full of buttons and flashy things.
Well, it's not only that, but the science, as far as we know, it has to sort of work.
Yeah, okay.
So nothing goes, I can tell you at some length, I've just read. I know, I've read 7 and I'm waiting for the 8th. So you can't go faster than the speed of light.
No.
Right, you can do all sorts of things, crazy stuff that may be possible in the future, but you can't go faster than the speed of light. You can't just do magic. That's not what it is. And I was completely addicted to it.
Would you recommend it to a non-aficionado? Because I'm slightly intimidated by that.
No, I think I'd go for Ted Chiang, which is just brilliant. It doesn't matter. It is science fiction, but it doesn't matter what it is. I mean, it doesn't anyway, but they're particularly brilliant, I think. But this one you might... I don't know. I think it's great.
May I ask, with this space opera, what are the threats in the world?
Well, there's all sorts of threats.
In the galaxy.
Yeah.
I've never heard anyone hold a term at arm's length.
Yeah.
What is this?
You could hear
the square quotes. The scare quotes were there, weren't they? They were vocalised square quotes.
Well,
I don't usually go much further than the kitchen sink for my fiction. So.
What is this moving picture of which you speak?
It's a very interesting question, Theo, actually, because...
Answer it quickly.
There are alien threats,
okay,
which you might expect, but there are very much human threats. A lot of it is about politics. Because it's just a thought experiment. All fiction is a thought experiment.
It's
no like such all, thing as science fiction.
It's like all historical fiction set in the present.
True.
Yeah, that. I had to think about that for a minute. Yeah.
It's not, but it also is.
Yeah.
Thea?
Well, I say I don't go very far from the kitchen sink, but I've in fact gone to a ferry terminal in Spain for my choice. So I'm choosing Kevin Barry's Night Boat to Tangier. So I'm taking Marjorie Perloff's suggestion and choosing something old and something new. So the something new is this Kevin Barry novel, and it is... set in this Spanish ferry terminal, two aging Irish gangsters waiting for a young woman, a daughter, and it's a very Irish waiting. It's like deep waiting, deep complicated waiting.
Beckettian waiting.
Yes, Beckettian waiting, and it's crime and consequence and conscience with no redemption. So That's cheery.
Yeah.
And it's short, but his style, Kevin Barry's style, is such that he really does a lot with. I think it's probably about 140 pages, something like that.
Mate,
maybe a little bit longer.
Two short recommendations in this. That's useful for people.
And that balances my something old, which I've mentioned on this podcast already this year, actually. Elizabeth Jane Howard, The Light Years, the first volume of the Cazalet Chronicles. I had never read any Elizabeth Jane Howard. And now I'm becoming increased. I just haven't read anything that good.
When's it set?
Well, so it's a family saga,
and it's the kind of book with so many characters in it that you need, and you have a family tree at the start.
Lovely,
of it.
Yeah.
So it starts in 1937, I think it is, or 35, and goes through eventually to the 1950s, and it is just so beautifully written, and it's long and it's immersive.
Lovely. When was it
and
written?
The dialogue is incredible. She writes children just amazingly. And Hilary Mantel is a massive fan, and she hoped a few years ago that Elizabeth Jane Howard would kind of see the same kind of second wave of success as Barbara Pym and Elizabeth Taylor have. And I don't know if, I mean, I know people know about her, but people don't seem to be as excited as I am now that I've read her. And I've sort of told myself that I'm going to ration it and read one of the five Cazalet Chronicles a year. I can see that that's very quickly not going to happen.
No, I think gorging on
binge them.
Yeah, binging on books is that's great. David Horsepool. I believe there's a book by.
Well, there's
Julia
a book.
Bueno.
I think we mentioned that. That's absolutely fine. I could give you a novel.
Okay.
That I love very much. One of my favourite writers, Colson Whitehead, published The Nickel Boys this year, which is a pretty short novel as well. Actually, it's a bit of a theme. It's about a sort of reform school in the south of the United States in, I think, about the 50s. And it's incredibly cruel and violent, as you might expect. And it's this very kind of shocking story, but it's very kind of sparely told. It's not overindulgent at all. And it's got a brilliant kind of twist within it.
Did you like The Underground Railroad?
I did, yeah. And a lot of his books are very kind of, they have a kind of slightly tricksy premise, like The Underground Railroad had, and his book about
literally
Lyft.
Underground Railroad,
exactly,
the premise, yeah.
And he had a book about Lyft, people who were in charge of elevators, some of whom intuited whether they needed repairing or not, and some of whom did it practically, and usually they're a kind of allegory of race. Actually, The Nickel Boys is much more kind of straight than that, and I think it's just a fantastic novel.
Oh, lovely.
And I haven't heard it spoken about that much. I can give you a history book.
I would do. It's your area of expertise. All history is set in the present.
Well, there's a republished history book that I read this year, which is absolutely brilliant, which is Cornelius Ryan's A Bridge Too Far, published by Library of America. It's the story of Operation Market Garden,
is
which
that
was turned into that magnificent film.
Is that the man with it who says, "I don't need a gun, I've got an umbrella"?
Yes, true story.
And then he uses an umbrella and he pokes it through an armoured car's spies and kills someone with it.
Yeah, and in fact, Cornelius Ryan tells the story of that man among many others, and some of the stories within are even more extraordinary than are told in the film, and it's just beautifully done. He wrote it when he was dying from prostate cancer, and he kind of wrote it against the clock, and he stopped taking his medication
He
could do it, and you get that real sense of urgency carrying on this sort of disaster unfolding and all the different ways in which it did. And it's quite a kind of special read to me because my mother was in Holland at the time while that was going on, so she kind of has always kind of told me about this time when the Canadians came, and you know, and it was incredibly exciting. So that's one published actually this year for the first time is Crucible by Charles Emerson, a book about the end of the First World War, which sweeps the whole way across the world, sort of intimate picture of Lenin, Trotsky, Freud, all around the world, even includes this remarkable character I didn't know, Claire Sheridan, Churchill's cousin, who was a sculptor, who modelled many of...
We had a good review on this book.
We did. Lucy Hughes Hallett wrote a good review. And she modelled these people. She had an affair with Charlie Chaplin. You know, it's all kind of unfolding in front of you. It's like a historical novel, but...
But true. There's definitely a novel to be written
completely
like that.
Yeah.
Amazing. Shall I do mine?
Yes,
I'll
please.
Do it very briefly. I've done one from each century since the 18th in homage to Michael, which I actually have read this year because I've read a lot of books this year. 18th century Michael... Inspired partially by your essay on the subject, is the 200th anniversary of this great poem by Byron, Don Juan, which I thought I wouldn't like. It is so good. The rhyming in it is so perfectly done. It romps along like a historical novel, but it's in verse. The shade he throws on his fellow poets alone
is worth it. There's a bit at the beginning, the prologue.
Yeah.
It's like something from 8 Mile. He's sort of standing there.
Yeah.
And he has a go at the Lake Poets, and he has a go at Bob Southey.
Southey.
Yeah. And he talks about him having a dry bob, which is a name for sex without ejaculation. So he's sort of throwing this shade everywhere. He hates Wordsworth.
Absolutely.
Doesn't like Coleridge.
No, explain your explanation.
Yeah, exactly. And the rhyming is all often feminine rhymes, and they just come back and they are so brilliantly done, and I just thought it was magnificent. 19th century, Moby Dick, read this year again, having not finished it the first time properly when I had to do it at university, and absolutely loved it, particularly the first 150 pages, which are this Dickensian romp before he got into Shakespeare and went a bit weird. But the first 150 pages, particularly good. 20th century, recommendation for reading the TLS, The Eyes Were Watching God by Zora Neale Hurston, which who I'd never properly even heard of, and we had that feature about sort of witty women of the mid-century America. It's a book about living in Florida as a black woman and unhappy marriages therein. That's the 20th century. 21st century, I'll go for The Hero by Lee Child, published by TLS Books.
Of course.
Tell us about that one.
I believe we may have covered that somewhere else at some length. Well, David, I feel that was a good discussion of Books of the Year. We've survived it, and it's a really... Actually, I even sent you an email. I enjoyed it when I read it the first time, these Books of the Year, saying how much... Well, there's lots of interesting recommendations. Nothing too obscure, nothing too annoying.
No, nothing obscure, really.
No, very nice indeed. Thank you all. That's all we've got time for this week. Get subscribing to the TLS, get buying TLS merch, and let us know what you think of the website. If it's nice, send it to Lucy. If it's not nice, send it to me and I won't show it to Lucy. I'll just sort of grouch around the place a little bit. This week, the paper is full of great stuff. A historian, David Horsepool, whose nickname was Constipation because he was a shit that was impossible to shift.
Yes. Do you want to say who it was?
Go on.
Louis Namier.
Louis Namier. And we actually have a piece by Louis Namier in the paper.
Yeah, I found a piece that because he also used to write for the TLS. Not that we revealed it at the time. But yes, it's brilliant... synergy going on because we've got a biography of Louis Namier reviewed, we've got a thing by Louis Namier, and he's writing about Hitler, and we've also got a review of the biography.
It almost looks like this whole thing's been edited.
It's unbelievable.
Crazy. There's also a great piece, Lucian Freud, some musings on wokeness, and much more. Next week we'll do some politics and probably have to pick something less depressing as well. Until then, from Thea and from me, goodbye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.